Welcome to the Before Midnight podcast, coming to you from the N+1 studios overlooking beautiful downtown Frankfurt. In this podcast, we explore the world of endurance multisport. If it has to do with swimming, biking, running, or any combination of the three, we're there. This week, I'm so excited we actually get to do our first race review of the year, I guess. I don't think we've had a chance to do any until now.
No race reviews for us.
No, we got one, though. Now we have one. I'm excited. We might have two in a couple weeks.
Sure.
Brian won't be participating. He'll just be asking questions. I'm the one that has not shut down my season because I'm just so excited. Anyway, I'm your host, Linda Word, along with my co-host, Brian Schenkenfelder. Brian, how are you today?
I'm phenomenal. I'm ready to go. I'm locked and loaded.
Again, yay.
Same thing every week, man.
All right, do you have any dad jokes this week?
Well, let's see. I did see an idiot at the gym. He put his water bottle in the Pringles holder on the treadmill.
I like that. That is the right size. Pringles containers are great.
Yeah. Why was the king only 12 inches tall?
I don't know.
Because he was a ruler.
That's too punny.
Well, you know, light does travel faster than sound. That's why some people appear bright until you hear them speak.
Yeah, I've heard that one before. Yeah. Met those people before, too.
They're everywhere.
Yeah, they are. They are, even the time of COVID. So what have you been up to this last week? I think fun was soccer. How's that evolving? Any better?
It's been a crazy week, actually. My son finally turned 9.
That's right.
On Friday. So we had...
His birthday wasn't Friday. His birthday was Thursday. Yeah. That's sad. I know that and you don't.
It was the 18th. That was a Friday.
The 18th was... Today's the 22nd.
Let's pull up the calendar.
All right. Solve this dilemma.
The 18th was
Friday. Oh, you're right. It was Friday. Sorry. That's because I thought your kid's birthday was on Thursday the
17th. Yeah, you were wrong.
I was wrong. I'm glad I was wrong instead of you, since it's not my child.
No, we didn't have much of a birthday party. That kind of sucked because usually we have a pretty big shindig and we get an inflatable and have a lot of fun with it. And it was a perfect weekend to get an inflatable. We couldn't have gotten like a water inflatable. We could have gotten a big like obstacle course inflatable.
Last year you had one that was like taller than your house.
Yes, it was awesome.
That was crazy. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I went on it a few times. It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The kids and some of the adults really enjoyed quite a bit of it.
Yeah.
We're known for having these big parties, but this year with the whole Wuhan virus that's still out there, we...
Stop calling it that.
That's what it is. That's where it came from. It's like the Spanish flu. Came from Spain.
Anyway.
Okay, I call it the Chinese flu then.
It's okay. My husband found... This is off topic, but he found 2 mice in his hotel room and named them Corona and COVID.
So one's named after the beer?
Yeah. He let one of them go. And then the one that survived or made it back to Kentucky, he renamed Henry for some reason.
Nice.
He now lives in the field because I was like, yeah, no, hotel mouse is not staying in my house. Anyway.
So we had a small party. We had three of his friends over for a sleepover. And they were
up. Was
that
Friday night or Saturday?
That was Saturday night.
Okay.
They were up late. They played all day, and then that night they were playing different video games and stuff, and eventually they got on Broforce, one of my favorite games. And my wife went to sleep. I stayed up with them, and eventually they had me playing Broforce.
Surprise, not.
I think we didn't get to bed till 3.
Ouch.
That made for a late night, especially since I went to swimming at 5 in the morning.
On Saturday
Saturday morning at 5 to go to the swim. I almost pulled the all-night. I was almost 24 hours straight up.
Yeah.
That's good times.
You know, 2 more hours, you would have made it.
Of course, they got up at like 8 in the morning, too.
Oh, God. Why would they do that?
Because they're kids. That's what they do. Someone got up early, and once one gets up early, they all get up early. They got up by 8:30 at the latest, because that's when I remember looking at the clock going, it's 8:30. Why are they awake?
What is wrong with these children? They must have been hungry.
They're used to getting up early, and so they're not, you can do it once. It's like everything else. It's easy to do once. It's doing it over and over that's challenging.
So now I understand why your son was half asleep in the car yesterday and today.
That Sunday, it felt like I'd gone through a time zone change. That afternoon, I just got tired, and Monday, I was tired for a chunk of Monday, and slowly it's coming back to normal again. But that kind of threw me, the long day followed by pretty much two short nights of sleep. I mean, both those nights were probably 4 or 5 hours sleep.
Jeez. You're not that young anymore.
No, that hurts me. Like I said, I can get by on less sleep than I ever did. 6-7 hours. If I can do that, I'm golden. Once you start getting to that 5 and 4, you do that a couple nights in a row, I start to hurt a little bit.
It used to be I needed 8 or 9 and felt great. Now I've adjusted to just getting about 6. If I get 6.5, that's good. 7's kind of strange.
7's a sweet spot for me.
Yeah.
I don't know how often I get 7 hours sleep, but that's kind of the sweet spot for me as far as time.
More now, than that, I'll accumulate. Like, I'll get, like, 6 hours, 6 hours, 6 hours, and then, like, one night during the week get, like, 8 and just kind of make up for it, I guess.
Yeah, I don't get those anymore. Although, now that it's gotten cold, Sundays may be my sleep-in day.
Got to wait till the sun's up a little further to go bike.
Yeah, it gets a little too cold. Biking in the 40s is not nearly as much fun as biking in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, biking in the 70s, even the 60s, it's like, I mean, it's doable, of course. But
it's considerably better than 40.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so it was a crazy weekend with the birthday, and soccer finally kicked off last week, the one I'm coaching.
Oh, okay.
The 3v3 soccer. We had a lot of fun with that. The kids are completely out of shape. So I only have 7 kids. I was supposed to have 6, but we got a 7th one on the team. My thought is, we're going to play a lot of 3-on-3, and we're going to teach from that position. Mm-hmm. We'll do some basics, covers, very little talking, just some basic demonstrations, and then we'll play.
Mm-hmm.
We play about 4 or 5 minutes, they're all, like, sucking wind. And I was rotating one out each time just because I had an extra. It was like I was going about every 2 or 3 minutes, I was rotating somebody in and out just to keep practice moving. And we did some skills to slow it down in the middle because I would have killed them if we had scrimmaged the whole time. And then we go from that to Friday where the coach, like I said, he's knowledgeable soccer, but man, those practices boring.
Yeah.
It was another one of those practices where he talked most of it. They didn't do a ton.
Which I'm sure your son may have appreciated since he was tired from your practice.
No. Then they like asked volunteers for goalie. My son, of course, volunteered. And then, of course, like 5 minutes into that, he starts working with them. So I'm like, well, I'm going to be a goalie for this team. And I was like, well, after practice, I'm like, you're going to be goalie tomorrow. And he's like, how do you know? I'm like, he wouldn't have worked with you for 15 minutes if you weren't going to be goalie tomorrow.
Yeah.
But, of course, then they put him in the second half for goalie, and he didn't play the whole half. He only played 2/3 of it.
Oh.
The team they played wasn't very good.
Okay.
Because Alex's friend, I think, scored 5 or 6 goals. I mean, dribbled all between them and shot. Alex got kind of stuck on defense.
Okay.
And not my style of defense. He keeps them back pretty far. Mm-hmm. He wanted them to push up, but me, I'm like, if I'm running a defense, we're pushing like all the way up the field. We're not.
Yeah.
You have no business standing at the half field line or even further back. It's soccer. There's offsides. Everybody should be pushed forward a great extent. Now, you might want to leave one guy back near the halfway line, but for the most part, you need to be up into that quarter area and attacking from a defensive standpoint because you've got a goalie back there. They can't camp behind you because it's offsides. Right. If you have somebody in midfield, you're going to be far enough behind the action that you should be able to get back if there is a breakaway.
Okay.
But, you know, the coach, I get the feeling he coaches like high school.
Okay.
Where he talks to them and explains it, and they kind of set up in a very high school-type formation and stuff. I have a feeling he teaches older kids,
mm-hmm.
and he coaches older kids, and it just doesn't translate to younger kids. Because it was hilarious, because you'd be in the game, and he'd just say stuff like, I'm like, go down the line. I'm like, they have no idea what the line is, what that concept is.
Yeah. These kids can't run in a straight line yet.
Well, they don't understand the line is the out-of-bounds line. That's where he wants you to go. They're
like, what line? Yeah.
They don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. He'll like, I know there was a corner kick, and he's like yelling, mark somebody. And I'm like, they don't know what marking is.
Yeah. He's skipped a few years there.
He didn't explain what a mark is or how to mark somebody.
Yeah.
What that concept is. He's yelling this out, and they're like, what does that mean? You've said mark somebody. That doesn't mean anything. They don't know what mark is.
You got a magic marker?
You got to explain the terminology.
Yeah. Before the game, preferably.
Yeah. or have like just, hey, on defense, we're going to stand here, which would have been probably the better thing to do with just kids. Just block up the middle, that way they can't score. In the games, I mean, the kids just don't know what they're doing. The refs were a little better this time. They helped a little bit explain why they made their calls.
That's good.
Overall, it was just the kids just don't know what to do. They don't know how to do a corner. They don't know what they're doing on a corner kick. They just they kick it. Like the one kid, he kicked it and he kind of duffed it and it went like 3 feet. And he can't kick it again. So he just kind of comes up there and he's like, and the ref's like, you can't kick it again. You can't kick it again. And he just kind of sits there and looks at it. And everybody else is sitting there looking at the ball for a good 10 seconds before some kid comes and takes it.
Well, at least it's kind of entertaining.
It drives me nuts because, they haven't done enough working with them in a game type situation.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, in one practice a week and then a game. And I mean, it's hard, you know. And like you said, this coach probably hasn't worked with this age group of kids and he's still trying to figure out how to do it.
Yeah. And like the team they played was terrible. They were worse than our team was.
Well, that worked for your team's advantage.
Yeah. But it just. Now, the one time Alex did go forward, he had, like, some, like, 11-year-old, like, some big kid who was stocky that he battled with. And, hey, he held his own. He pushed back, and because that kid was pretty much just using his body as much as he could to get people out of the way. Yeah. And Alex held his own on that. Other than that, he really didn't do much in the game because, like I said, they had him mostly defense. The only time he was offense, they moved him forward for a few minutes. He was on kind of the other side away from where a lot of the action was occurring. He just didn't get many touches, which is disappointing because I think if he could have gotten the ball in space, probably could have made something happen. It's okay.
It's all good. It's all right. He's learning. You're never gonna have
slowly
the perfect coach. I mean well, some days you will, but
that's just a very frustrating league because it was an hour and a half practice and it was
this
a waste
is your
of time.
First time in that league too,
right. And I've seen three teams, and none of them are really that good. That's because I've seen my team and two of the teams they've played. And like our team has three or four kids.
Wasn't
it
one of his friends on this league last year?
In Anderson? No. Yeah. They didn't know why it was going to happen. That's why we ended up in this league.
Oh, gotcha.
Why was late in happening.
Right.
And the Y's playing 3-on-3. They've got some paranoia about all this because they sent out a thing saying, if you're coaching on the field, you've got to be wearing a mask. The kids don't have to, but the coach does. I'm like, oh, okay, we're outside. We are flipping outside.
And 6 feet away, you're coaching.
I need to be able to coach. I need to be able to communicate with these kids. Like, you got to be wearing it during the game, too. I'm like, the kids don't, but we're outside. There's no one near us. It's crazy.
It's very frustrating. I feel your pain. I mean, as a teacher, and I've got kids that can't figure out where my voice is coming from and who's talking to them. And, I will pull it down so that they hear me. Back up again. They're far enough away, whatever. It's interesting, though, because you do get their attention because they're used to hearing it muffled now. And then when you pull down the mask and all of a sudden I am clearly saying, stop what you're doing. Oh, man, they'll stop.
But I don't know how you communicate through a diaper. I mean, it just doesn't work. You can't vocalize very well.
It is hard. And I mean, like working with the younger kids that I do, 3 and 4 years old, they're still developing speech. And some of them are not going to develop it very well because it's going to be all they're hearing is muffling. So, I pick and choose when common sense, just common sense with them.
Yeah, maybe if it were inside, but we're outside in a big open field. I don't understand these things. But in the why, I mean, the reason we're playing 3-on-3 is because they don't want to have big teams.
To spread everybody out,
Again, that we're outside. It's not like we're inside in a basketball court or anything like that where you're in a very enclosed area.
Well, until this all gets worked out a little bit better, everybody's erring on the side of caution, so... All right.
Hopefully that can get through quickly so we can play some soccer and learn the sport. Although 3-on-3 we'll have fun with it because we're going to have a pretty talented team. We're pretty stacked. I think there's only three other teams, though, because they didn't advertise it very well, I don't think.
Yeah.
No one really knew about it. So
the
it's
Y
gonna
is
be.
A little interesting that way right now. Anyway, with RY joining with Lexington, the communication has been a little bit lacking. I mean, there's still people that don't realize that the Y here in Frankfort has been open for, I don't know, 3 months.
Right.
You know, and what do you mean there's classes?
I'm interested to see what these other teams, we play our first game next week. I'm hoping there'll be a couple other teams that have some kids with some talent, and it's not just people signed up and they get the random Y coach.
Well, you're going to have people that were paying attention, so hopefully we'll have the kids that just diehard soccer fans and want to be out there.
Hopefully there'll be teams better than us, because I would really hate to be the best team in the league by far. You don't learn anything when you don't go up against good teams.
True.
Then we'd have to do stupid stuff like, okay, you're going to have to pass it 5 times before you score, just to keep them from running the score up on teams. This is 3-on-3. Gotcha. This is going to be very high scoring. If you were better than the other team, you're going to score a lot of goals.
Yeah.
And quickly.
Yeah.
There's no goalie. There's nothing.
Oh, I forgot there's no goalie. That's right.
So it's 3-on-3. As soon as you can get some space, I've got players who can score from a lot of places. And if you can't defend it.
And you got kids that can run, too.
Right. And if you can't defend it, we're going to score a lot of goals quickly. Whoever, if you can't defend anything, you're going to get a lot of goals scored on you in this format. If you can defend it, you can actually play a pretty good game and pretty low-scoring game. The question is, will these other teams have the talent to defend it? Because if not, then I'm going to have to do things to keep it from getting ugly. Like, I don't even know what I'm going to have to do.
Well, like you said, you know, have them pass back and forth, you know.
Yeah, before you score, you have to pass at least 4 times or something. Well, I mean, that's going to be the strategy if that's what we end up with. I'm hoping, like I said, most of the teams are really good, and we're like one of the weaker teams, because then we have a lot to work on and get better at the game.
But we'll see. It's a
it'll definitely be interesting. I'm excited, though. I love soccer. I love coaching.
Yeah.
I should have been a football coach. Difference.
Yeah. For another podcast, we'll talk about why Brian should have coached.
Oh, yeah, I should have been a coach of a team sport.
Well, you are. It's just soccer.
Yeah. If we had technology today that we had, if I had the technology today that we, 20 years ago when I was a kid, I probably would have ended up a coach in some sport, because then I could have broken down film when I was young. Because that's something I would have probably done if I'd had like that type of technology. That'd been something I would have enjoyed doing. I was very much I enjoyed the concept of coaching more than I did actually playing. Although I did play every sport as a kid.
You played a lot of sports.
I played just about everything.
Yeah. Did you play football?
Except cricket. Yes. I was tiny. I was no good. I was second team the whole time.
Yeah, that happens when you're small.
Although I almost got to be the kicker.
I was going to say, yeah.
Once. They put everybody around to like kick to see if anybody could even kick a field goal. This was like 6th or 7th grade. Because it's worth 2 points in grade school. It was in college, high school, it's only worth 1. And going for it's worth 2. In grade school, they reverse it. Because it's actually harder to get a kickoff in grade school than it is to score from the 2-yard line. And I was the one who could kick it far enough to make it, but they never decided to kick field goal or kick the extra point. So that was the closest I got to like seeing a game in meaningful time. I don't even know if I played during games. I expect most of the time I probably just sat on the bench and played in scrimmages and stuff like that back in. I remember I played like 5th, 6th, and 7th grade. In 8th grade, I ran cross country, and I wasn't any good at that either.
That's surprising. Wow. I figured it's cross country.
I'm not fast.
Okay. Faster than me.
But from a guy, I'm not fast. It's the problem.
Yeah. Okay.
I always finish somewhere in the middle of the pack. My skill in athletics was hustle. I out-hustled a lot of people. Looking back at my sport, the sport probably would have been best suited for me would have been probably tennis or soccer. Looking back, soccer wasn't really a sport much when I was a kid, though. That only became popular in the 90s.
So that's the only team sport I ever remember being involved in at all.
That's because you were outside the U.S.
No, I wasn't.
Your parents came from outside the U.S.
I was in the U.S. I mean, that was in Massachusetts. That's the United States the last time I checked.
Yeah, because soccer was only big outside the U.S. until probably the 90s and 2000s.
Also, I was a girl.
I
didn't do gymnastics. I hated flipping over my head. Hence, I still can't do flip turns in a pool very well. And then girls rode horses and danced. But I do remember for the presidential physical fitness test that I caught all the guys on the sprint, on the run. And I remember the coach being like really surprised that I could.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
But women didn't really run back. Nobody ever encouraged me after that. So.
Yeah, no, I played all the sports. I mean, I was into most of the ball sports just as a kid. I watched them, played them. That was the enjoyable thing. My parents were not really my dad coached a lot, but he really wasn't like going to guide me into, hey, these are the sports you should probably play.
Yeah.
Eventually, I mean, he was a golfer. He played golf in college.
Yeah, and that's what you ended up doing.
I ended up playing golf. It was randomly I got involved in golf. My dad would never really teach me golf.
He knew better.
Well, no, I wanted to go out and play. He wanted to go and teach me. He wanted me to go out and practice a lot before I went on the course. Where I just went out and started playing the par threes with some friends. We just went out and then we immediately got addicted, and because I have an obsessive compulsive personality. And for 4 years, I did nothing but play golf. And I got pretty good.
Yeah. Well, when, amazing that's all you how do that for happens. 4 years.
For 6 or 7 years, you play golf, you get pretty good at the sport.
Yeah. Practice makes perfect. All righty. Well, our podcast today is sponsored by 3Sport Endurance Coaching. 3SE develops training plans and support for athletes at all level, whether they're just getting their feet wet in triathlon or experienced competitors. Coaches at 3SE can work with that individual to customize a training plan and meet their specific needs. If you're looking for a coach, check them out at go3sport.com, which is now, I'm so excited, on our brand new kits that we just got. Yay! So you guys will, if there's any races, you'll see us out and around.
So you raced this weekend?
I did race this weekend. Oh, my God. Let's see. What events have I actually done this year? Starting in January. Let's see. I was lead cycle January 1st. February, I don't think I did anything. March, I was a cyclist for the Lucky Leprechaun, and then the world shut down.
Yes.
So that was it.
So let's work our way through the race day then. Normally, when they have races like this, they'll have a pre-race meeting where they get everybody together. Now, from what I understand, they did a virtual one of those days in advance?
They did on Friday, we got an email, and then it was also on their Facebook page for the timing company or for the race company. That was a video, YouTube video, of our pre-race meeting. That was our pre-race meeting. And it was pretty cool because he was like in the different locations, which was nice. Like, here we are down at Transition. I was like, oh, sweet. Now I know where to go.
Did he make any jokes? Usually he does jokes.
I don't remember what they were.
Because he usually has something like, you want to stay on the right side of the lane because cars win or something like that. Which is a pretty true statement.
Yeah. No, I think he was just trying to make sure everybody did everything that they were supposed to do so that we could have this race. It was pretty good. You know, he's like, you know, this is your pre-race meeting. And we ended up kind of having a pre-race meeting anyway, outside in the pool area.
Well, of course.
Just to get everybody lined up and stuff.
So you show up race morning. How do you get your number and your time chip?
So Linda can't tell time or read directions very well. So I knew that packet pickup started at 7 and it was at the outdoor pool. And it was held in Shelbyville where we swim. The locker rooms have been closed since March, and they did not open those up for us. So we could use the bathrooms for the outdoor pool. That was the only bathrooms we could use. So that's where they had race packet pickup. You got stopped at the gate. A lady said, how are you feeling today? Do you have a fever?
I feel sick. I'm feverish. Let me in.
Have you been around anybody who's tested positive for COVID? She had like 6 questions.
Right.
Did not take our temperature, which that's okay because we were outside and it was cold. It was 7 o'clock in the morning. Weather. It was dark and it was cold.
Temperatures dropped over this last week considerably.
Yes, they did. Let me tell you. Yes, they did. So then you walked in, got your number, shirt. Everything was in Ziploc bags. There were a couple pens over at the table. Friend Al did my number for me on my arm and my leg because I can't lay upside down.
Did they make you stand like 6 feet apart in line waiting for your number and stuff? Or is just kind of walk in
just
and pick
did.
Up?
You know, you just did. You didn't walk up and hug somebody, you know.
Right.
I mean, there was none of that. It was, you know, people kept their distance. Volunteers all had masks on. Actually, yeah, participants did too at that point. We all had masks on in that area, you know, in that area. People were pretty good about it. The only person actually at the beginning who didn't have the mask on was the police officer. Like, okay.
Good for him.
And then for some reason I had in my head, I was like, packet pickup is at 7, but the race starts at 7:30. Boy, that's going to be quick. No, race didn't start till 8:30. Oops. Which was good.
Gave you some extra time.
It did.
Okay, so you get your packet. They do the marking right there. That's pretty typical for most of these races.
Right.
How did they do the transition area?
So the pool, it was an indoor pool swim, and we ran down grassy area. The transition area...
It used to be parking lot.
It is. It was in a parking lot.
Yeah.
And that's actually where we got to park as well. I don't know if they limited registrations on this race, but there were 70 finishers. So there was, I had a rack all to myself.
How many racks did they have then?
They had them all.
Everybody had what? How many people they put on a rack?
It was self-serve. So if, you know, there was maybe 3-4 people on each rack, maybe more than that. I mean, two racks next to each other that you normally fit, what, 6 bikes on?
Yeah.
There was maybe 2 or 3 at the most. I didn't really go through and count. I picked one on the end because I can't run in my bike shoes very well, but right. I can run in my running shoes. So I want to have my bike as close as I can to the exit and the entrance for the bike transition. And then I'll run in my shoe, you know,
right
across. And for some reason, nobody else really did that. Why? But anyway, so that's what I was all by myself up there. There was a tandem bike. There was a blind athlete. I felt really bad though, because when they got done, they had a flat tire in the
Ooh, that's fun.
So that was, they were tethered this one.
So basically, it was a fairly small race, and yeah, they have enough racks that you'd probably only have about 2 or 3 people per rack, because that's fairly normal for them.
I'm going to say there was 20 racks out there, if I were to guess.
Okay, that's probably about right. Because it was a small race, they could do it. Now, the question is, if they had like 200 people, I wonder what it would have been like.
Well, that's why I'm wondering if they limited it.
I doubt it.
You know, I mean, they could have had at least 30 more people there.
Yeah.
And they would have had room on those racks.
Their race is never that big anyway.
Right. But considering that it's the only one that's been in this area, I mean, unless you went to Indiana.
Yeah, but most people were like me. They probably shut it down and don't really, not the end of the world.
Or looked at the weather and went, yeah, no, I don't think so.
Or they looked at the weather and didn't think so. I mean, because I talked to somebody who was there, and she was like, yeah, some of the regulars weren't there for that race. Now there's probably a whole new breed, because most of the regulars are probably a little bit older now. but yeah, so it was a small race. So that, they had enough racks so they could at least separate out. I can be kind of curious if they'd had more people, but that's okay. And now you get your bike racked, you get everything in space, and then you guess go back to the pool area and hang out that outside pool area.
Well, I went
and
sat in my warm car for quite a while. Wow. Well, and see, the other thing I did too was I wasn't sure where the transition area was, even though he had it on video. I was like, you know, and it was dark when I got there. So I actually walked around with a flashlight because I went behind. And anyway, so I was parked up by where the packet pickup was. Once I got all my stuff, I drove my car around, so that took a little extra time. Unloaded the bike, got set up, tried to decide if I was going to put a coat on for the bike because, oh my gosh, it was very cold. Then went up and hung around the pool, yeah.
Yeah, the biggest problem with the cold was it's new, so you're not used to the cold, so everything feels colder than it would normally feel.
Right.
Yeah. I've done September races that were colder than that one. It's different.
Yeah. I mean, I think it got up to maybe 50 by the time I got on the bike.
Now, that was warmer than the race I did where they started us 20 minutes later because it was still in the 30s.
Oh, God. No.
When the race was supposed to start. I think it got up to like 40, 41 by the time we got out to the bikes.
Was it a pool swim? Or
yes.
Okay.
It was at UK, actually. The old Try for Sight, so it was at University of Kentucky, their pool indoor. We were hanging out inside there, and they delayed it probably 15, 20 minutes. I'm pretty sure it was because they wanted the sun to come up. It was really, really,
really cold.
It was in the 30s because I remember that's when I had the rule of always take jackets and stuff with you, because I went, I just really wasn't thinking, and all I had was kind of, they gave us like a long sleeve shirt the day before, and I had that, and I remember standing around going, oh my God, this is really, really cold. And I think I ended up getting in my car, maybe running it a little bit just to kind of warm up a little bit. I didn't want to warm up too much because I knew it was going to be cold. Maybe I just sat in the car and just kind of shivered just to get out of the wind, I think was the big thing.
This was before the race even started?
Yes.
Oof.
It was just, well, it was at the UK football stadium, so it was wide open.
Okay,
so all
gotcha.
That wind was just rolling through. And I sat in my car mainly just to get out of the wind until it was time, and then we'd walk over, and we were inside the UK auditorium, so that whole place is huge, that whole complex in there, and it was warm in there. And that was wild.
You should have just had the race inside. It's big enough.
That was a wild race, because I remember the bike, and I think I maybe took some gloves just to get my hands warm. That was the coolest I've ever been on a bike. That was when I had some, it was difficult to breathe, and you could just feel everything just frozen cold.
Yeah, luckily that wasn't my problem. It wasn't that cold.
I remember the chest being cold. That was the only time I've ever raced where my chest got cold.
I was nervous that was what was going to happen.
But. Yeah, I mean, it's a short race like that. You just suffer and move on.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it's cold like that, you're like, it's going to be cold. I'm just going to suffer. You go, you do it, you suffer, you get done, and then you tell yourself never to do them again. is my strategy on that. So we get you're hanging out before the race. Now it's time for the race to start. How did they separate you out for the swim start? Normally they would just self-seed. Did they do a self-seed again?
They self-seeded. So okay. They were hollering out 6 minute, and those were the first people that lined up, 6:30, 7, and you kind of talked to everybody around you and it's like, okay, I knew I was probably about an 8:30. So there weren't a whole lot of people that jumped in line at the 7s. There seemed to be kind of a gap there. So.
There usually is. There's usually the gap between like the 6, low 6s and that 8. That 7, there's not a ton of people in the 7 for some reason. It's kind of a weird.
Yeah, which I was like, oh, nobody's coming. All right, well, here we go. So
yeah.
I was, near a couple people. One gentleman I knew from bike group, and he was like, yeah, I'm about an 8:32. So girl got in front of me. Who, she said she was in the 8s. I'm like, okay, this is cool. So, that was probably, I was probably about halfway. Yeah, I was probably about 30, 35 getting in the pool out of 70 people.
Yeah, the sprints tend to have a dichotomy. You have some fast people that race in them, and you have a lot of kind of newer people, beginners, mm-hmm. people haven't raced a lot.
Yeah, there were a lot of people that were like, no, I'm going to be way back here.
Yeah, then you get people who really can't swim.
Yeah, yeah, they're like, I'm very nervous, and no, I'm going to wait.
Did they ask how many new people were there?
No, they did not.
A lot of times they do.
If they did, they did that outside before I realized that they were talking out there.
Okay, yeah, because they'll usually ask that question. In the last few years, that number has been pretty small. Mm-hmm. It used to be like half the people in their hand.
There weren't very many people there that it was their first one. There's one lady I talked to. She had been training for her first Ironman for this year. Obviously that didn't happen. So.
Okay, so they take you in groups of 10, I guess?
We just all kind of lined up around the pool. Now, the lifeguard was getting nervous about the number of people that were in there, and so they asked the spectators to get out.
Right.
If you're not actually racing, you need to be out of this building.
Yeah.
And they've got the big garage door, so the line of people to swim, kind of went outside. So we never had,
How often do they send people apart on, like 20 seconds?
I thought they were going to do 20. They did 10.
Oh, they did do 10?
They did 10 seconds. Yeah, it was fast. I was like, whoa, okay.
Well, that would explain why there were so many people in the pool one time.
Yes, yes. It was rocking and rolling, let me tell you.
It's probably a good thing the health people weren't there. This is the problem you run into with triathlons and why I was kind of cautious about them ever, why I didn't think you'd run many of them this year, because there's no way to keep it from bunching up. It's just... that's the nature of the sport. You're going to get, and when you get to the middle, the back end of the pool where you were, people have no idea really what they're swimming. They lie. Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing.
And you get a ton of congestion.
They seem to do a whole lot better.
It does. I agree. It's a lot better than when you put yourself into buckets. Right. But generally, what happens is you get into the middle and you get somebody who didn't know their time or just didn't really. Wasn't aware when they seated themselves,
mm-hmm.
and they block things up. And when you start getting towards the middle and back, no one knows how to pass.
Right.
And that just creates this huge, massive just pile up in the middle of the pool.
Well, it was funny because that was happening at the front. I mean, these people were not getting out of the way. One of our swimmers, that's why I didn't even realize they were talking, because I was talking to her before the race. And I was watching her. She was 10th one in the water. And she could not get past these people. They were not stopping. They weren't, you stop at the wall if somebody's trying to pass you and you let them go by. They were not letting her do that. And she finally snuck through the middle. She had somebody coming at her and was behind somebody and managed to do it without getting a collision, So.
Yeah, like the front end, they can usually, because the front end swimmers are generally swimmers.
Mm-hmm.
So they're much more comfortable doing something different mm-hmm. at the walls and getting around people, where you get into the back and people just aren't comfortable in the water, so they're not gonna like really do anything, and you just get these huge pileups. And it's just the way the sport is. It's just, yeah. That's just what happens in these things. It's not anybody's real fault. That's just what happens. That's why one of the reasons, again, I didn't think we'd probably have a lot, because packs and things like that tend to form on the bike and everything else in the sport bike of triathlon.
Well, we'll get into that. But the swim, I mean, I lucked out. You know, I had one lady in front of me, I had a guy behind me, and I caught her about 75 yards in. And I knew, you know, I was like, okay, I'll just slow down a little bit, which is probably a good idea for me to do anyway, kind of to fry myself before I finish this dang thing. And so I waited until I was like underneath the flags, and that's about when I touched her foot. And she stopped at the wall, let me get past her, no problem. And then there was nobody in front of me. So...
That's the ideal. Is that you end up
nice gap. Yeah,
you end up with one slow person, and you get around them. The people in front of them are a lot faster than her or him, mm-hmm. and then you have this free swimming. That happened to me once in a race.
It's wonderful. It really worked well because the people, I didn't want her and the other guy to catch me. I could see them every time I turned. It would go up. I just kept on turning my head to the left so that I knew that I was staying close enough over to the side. Wasn't going to swim into anybody. So I really don't know who was coming at me. I honestly don't know how close I was to them because I never did breaststroke or anything like that to see. I just kept on turning my head to the left and I could see where they were. And it actually kind of pushed me a whole lot faster. I ended up having, according to my watch, the fastest swim I've ever had.
Yeah.
I had a 7:45.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's, if you can get that cleaner swim, it's great.
Now the last, when you finish and you're next to the wall, I mean, and the pool, it was rocking and rolling, and you might as well have been in the ocean. I mean, it,
oh, yeah,
you know, by the time I was in the middle, I was like, oh, my God.
That's the biggest shock to new swimmers is how rocking a pool can actually get in these races.
Yeah, it was wild. I was like, okay, there's a lot of people in here. It's like a bunch of piranhas or something. You know, you see the top of the water just shaking. That's kind of what it was like. And then that last lane, when you're right next to the wall and they've got the wheelchair lift, you know, the lift there on the side.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, please don't. I hope I don't get nailed into that. Okay. Made it past that and touched the wall, climbed out the steps, and off I went.
So you get on the transition. Transition went well, right? You just jumped in and got on the bike and ran out. I mean, there's no one there. It's a tiny little transition. It takes like 15, 20 seconds, right?
Yeah, it should.
You go in, you throw your glasses on, you throw your helmet on, you run out the transition.
Yeah, I even have glasses attached to my helmet. I didn't have to deal with that. And I still had really incredibly slow transition. I'm embarrassed by my transition.
Okay. I know one thing you don't do is you don't leave your shoes on your bike.
No, I don't. I don't have.
Makes me sad. But you don't do that.
I don't have the right kind of shoes to do that. I got buckles on my shoes. You kidding me?
Yeah, you could still do it if you really wanted to.
I'd fall off the bike.
Well, you probably would.
Plus, I was running down the hill. You know, I was so terrified of being cold. I knew I was just going to be frozen. And that was a bad thing to kind of keep on thinking about. So I'm down there. I'm putting on my shoes. I'm putting on my helmet. And I had a fleece jacket there. And I was like, do I? No, I don't. And I grabbed my bike and I went. Did not put on the jacket. The other big mistake I made... actually coming out of the pool, and I'm so mad at myself. So I got a Phoenix watch, got a triathlon setting. Night before, I'm like, okay, let me make sure I know how to do this. Okay, pushing this bottom right-hand button. Okay, so I got to push that when I get out of the water. I got to push that one. Apparently, no, you don't. You don't have to touch it because it kept on changing on its own. So my transition too includes my bike. I have no idea. I had
that
no idea
about
the
run.
That must
be a new feature because I'm always like hitting the swim for T1 on the bike sometime in that first mile.
Well, I mean, it's like I got out of the water because I also knew that when I didn't cross a timing mat until I was all the way down the hill, and I didn't want that run time.
Well, realistically, the Phoenix should be, a watch should be able to pick up when you're swimming, running, and biking.
Well, it did.
And do it automatically.
And I didn't know it.
That's cool. I'll have to check it out, the feature, and see if
because
that's
something
that's there now.
Because I hit it when I got out of the water, and I figured, okay, I'm in T1 now.
Right.
And I knew it would be different than the race's timing, but I wanted that swim time.
Okay.
Which I guess I did get, because I saw later on that it was 7:45, and then the race added in me running down to the timing mat, so it ended up, I think it was 8:51, according to their numbers. So, I don't know, but...
Yeah, like, the tri-swim thing, that never worked for me, because I'd always get out of the water, I'd go through transition, I'd be, like, a mile down the road on the bike, and I'd be like, oh, I forgot to hit the button.
Right.
Bink, bink. So my T1 usually takes place about 3 miles from the water, and it's a 2-second transition. It's really fast.
Well, I hit it when I left the bike, and it said T2, and I was like, wait, oh, shoot. So yeah. I had the bike computer on, so I do have an accurate, fairly accurate, at least, bike time. Race had me at 20.4 miles an hour on the bike. I had 18.5 on my computer. I'll take theirs. Thank you very much. But nice bike course. I was freezing. A friend of ours that's also a swimmer was at the end of the, when you left on the bike. And I was like, I'm going to freeze as I'm going by her. There's all kinds of people and stuff. They laughed at me. They thought that was pretty funny.
You shouldn't think about that. You just got to be thinking about going. It's just, it's cold. Meh, move on.
Yeah. So I passed one lady on the bike. She looked, she had like a coat on and everything else. She was probably a really fast swimmer, but very insecure on a bike. So, and that's a rough road. I said, watch this road. You know, it's kind of bumpy through here when you're going over all those bridges and stuff. It's
right at the beginning. Yeah, yeah, it's pretty rough there. But then once you make it up, because it went around the bypass, didn't it? Didn't it two loops along the bypass?
Yeah.
Usually that bypass is into the wind. Was it into the wind?
It wasn't too bad. It's like a slight grade uphill the whole time.
The whole way.
So I just buckled down and.
And it's usually into the wind, which makes it very frustrating.
Yeah, I didn't feel a whole lot of wind. I mean, I was freezing. My legs warmed up pretty fast. My hands don't get cold like yours, so that was not a problem. But my back just started to, like somebody had this huge ice pack on my back.
Oh, yeah, good times.
Suck it up, buttercup, and go, you know,
12
miles.
Then you get up to the end, you take a right, it's downhill, it's very fast.
Yes,
that was fun. And if you can take that corner fast, you can gain a lot of time on the field.
I did.
A lot of time on the field can be gained if you can hit that, because you can hit that at full speed.
I drove it the day before, so I could also see, because there's some rumble strips in there, and you've got the white line, and it's like, okay, when you take this turn, let it go wide and go into the road, you know, and so that's what I did. And there was a volunteer there, so I wasn't get smushed by any cars turning or anything like that. People were paying attention. I didn't pay any attention to any cars. I think we had, one tried to pull out in the road in front of the cyclist in front of me when we were right in front of FAC. And I was like, oh, that was a bad move. And they like stopped and stayed in the middle of the road.
Yeah, of course.
And then we're like, oh, maybe I should move forward and get out of the way of the people on bikes.
But that, I know that corner right there, a lot of people break hard for that corner.
I didn't break hard.
And if you just barrel through that at full speed, like nowadays, I would probably ride it faster than I ever rode it before. I'd probably hit that at 35, 40 miles an hour and probably freak out everybody there. When I took that turn at high speed,
I probably hit it about 20. I didn't want to go super wide, so because I wasn't paying attention to cars either. If somebody was coming up the other way, so. But
then as you head back in, there's that little climb right before the jail that's a pain in the ass.
The other thing about that road is it was shady. Everywhere else was in the sun, so it's nice and warm. And all of a sudden, it was shady, and I'm like, I'm cold again. I'm cold again. I'm cold again. I'm cold again. But I like that road. It is a nice. And I passed
flat until you get to the end.
Three or four people took that turn pretty well. And that hill, I was prepared for that hill, and I was like, oh, this is nothing. I think I shifted maybe. But and then you take the sharp corner at the light and then went past the entrance again, told everybody I was still freezing to death. Mimi said I made everybody laugh, and then went around again.
Then you get off and you go and do the run. I know they changed the run course back into like the field, so it was basically an off road race, wasn't it?
And
gravel.
It was a gravel road for the most part. You went out the back of the park, and one of the race directors was there at the end. And it was funny because she knows I'm a runner, and she's like, "Here you come, Linda. Here you come." And she's like, "Do you run trails?" And I was like, "Well, sometimes, you know." I mean, she was shouting. We had enough time, and I mean, I'm moving. Don't worry. I'm not like stopping and having a conversation. But
that wouldn't be beyond you.
And I was like, yeah, so that, you know, not like she knows a couple of my friends that do all their ultra races. And I was like, not like those guys, but yeah, I run trails. And then after I took the corner and it was a little bit of gravel, and then I went down the hill and it was like, it was ruts, you know, where the vehicles had been and fairly large rocks. And it was like, oh, now I know why she asked me that. Cause this is like ankle rolling city here, you know, if you're not careful. And then it went back to pavement and then back on some pretty rough gravel. I mean, I was bouncing side to side like I would on a trail just to kind of really paying attention to where my feet were planted, and got to the halfway point, turned around.
Did they have any water on the race?
They had water at that corner.
That's surprising.
And then they usually at a 5K, they'll have at least one water stop.
Yeah, but with all this stuff, I'm surprised they had like open containers of water.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Usually, the normally most races, or what I've heard, they're doing closed bottles, but whatever. I don't know. I took a sip. I grabbed a drink.
Local race.
Was talking to our friend, the swimmer, who I hollered at her at one of the out back parts. I was like yelling at her, and she was like, "That was you yelling at me." I was like, "Yeah." So went past her and went on. And I was fourth woman. I almost caught the third place, the woman that crossed the finish line third. I came really close. So I knew that my time was probably a bit better than hers, cumulative. And it turned out that it was much better. And I came in second overall for the women. So that was pretty cool.
Yay.
Yay.
So you finished the race. What did they do post-race? Is it just get the hell out of here as fast as possible?
Yeah. They wanted us to get... I mean, that's... He announced. He's like, there's no... You know, they had granola bars and...
Well, I mean, I guess the question I have is, how did they deal... I guess this is such a small local race. But when you get into bigger races, the question is, I'm done, and there are people not off the bike yet.
Oh, yeah. There were people, like, leaving on the bike when I came in, I'm pretty sure, when I came in running. Well, no, it wasn't that bad.
It'd be too late. They'd be coming back on the bike, probably.
Well, it was two loops, and when I finished my second loop, I was passing people that were on their first loop.
Right. That's not surprising. Now think about the guys who were up front.
Oh, God, yeah. They announced at the very beginning, everybody was going to get... They had a towel that they gave everybody,
right,
with their logo on it. So everybody got that when they finished. And then they're mailing awards for overall.
Right. No, fine. But I was just kind of curious because I know usually when I'm done in a lot of these smaller races where you have a pool swim, if I'm far enough up front in the pool, I'm done with the race well before as some of the last people are coming out of the pool type thing. And that makes it kind of curious. That race might have been small enough. You can probably avoid each other. The question becomes is, how do you leave? How do you go into the transition area and get your stuff when there's other people still racing and need to use that transition area, especially coming back on the bike?
Well, because it was spread out enough, it wasn't a big deal. I didn't really notice. I mean, I know when I came in from the run, there were people just starting the run.
Right.
So there were plenty of people still out in the bike course.
Yeah.
When I finished.
Because I was
the 12th person across the finish line. So that means there were, 58 people still out there.
Because the concern becomes, I'm getting all my stuff together, I can get in someone else's way.
Yeah.
Accidentally.
Yeah.
Which is why a lot of times they close the transition area until all the bikers come in, and then you can go get your stuff.
Right. No, they didn't bother doing this one.
And this is some of those logistics where I just don't know how it works, especially, in a 60 or 70, you can kind of get away with that.
Yeah.
And if someone gets in your way, it's not a big deal. But if I have 200 or 300 racers...
That's going to be a little bit more problem.
These are all some of the logistics.
This transition area was in the parking lot where we all parked. In order to get out, you're going on the bike course.
Right. That's even worse.
Yeah. So I didn't notice any issues. Granted, I knew enough people there that, I'm sorry, I did hung out and talk. I put on a mask and I hung out and talked.
But I mean, that's kind of my question is, it's not... The middle of the packers is probably not a big deal for, but when you're in the front end of the race, like the really fast guys, they're going to be done.
Right. How do they get out of there?
It was try for sight when they cut that run course just a little short.
Yeah.
I remember being done, hanging out for a minute, going up to the pool and watching the last four or five swimmers finish.
Oh, wow. That was a big race, too.
That's a big race with 200 or 300 people. And I know they kept the transition area there closed until everybody got back from the bike, I think.
Well, they do an awards and all that, too.
Right.
So,
this gets to that whole logistics of a race. When a race gets big enough and it's a small enough distance, you get, even doesn't matter what the distance. You're going to have people, the longer the distance is worse because the people get done first. There's a bigger time split.
Yeah.
How do you get out of there and not interfere with other racers?
Very carefully.
Well, this is kind of the whole logistics of what this is all, again, why I never really bought into this is what we're going to do these races in a socially distant manner, because there's not a good way to do that because of these gaps and how things interflow with each other.
Yeah, with this one, it didn't really matter.
Well, it's a small local race. Yeah. It's under the radar.
We didn't go up to Indiana, so I don't know how Tri-Indy went, because that would be one to see how they did that.
That would have been much more interesting, because they probably would have had bigger numbers. I know they capped their race, but they probably still would have had 100-plus people. Because they normally have 400 or 500 people racing at that
right. one. Well, they probably, I don't know. I'd have to look on the results, see what
I guess, now I'm trying to think, did they may have only done a sprint, too. Some of the Olympic distance races only jumped down and just did sprints.
Just did sprints.
Okay. Just to keep it short and small and everything else and keep people close together. Because as those races spread out, you get a lot more people done before people are off the bike. And, you know, it's kind of hard to clear out of there if you can't go into the transition. Yeah. And get your stuff.
Get in here and get your stuff. How do you get out? Yeah. Yep. Interesting. Yeah, this didn't... I'll have to pay a little more attention to that, because there is one more October 11th.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a very different race for me, because I'm going to do that with one of our clients. And after being in that pool rocking and rolling, he's starting dead last in that pool.
That is the biggest shock people have that come into the sport that have never raced it, is they swim in a pool, they're used to swimming in a pool, and then you get into these races, and it's a little better up front. But once you get to the middle, which if you're new to the swimming, you're going to be in the middle of the back anyway. You're not going to come into the sport swimming a 6-minute mile or 6-minute 400. It's not going to happen.
Not going to happen. Not unless you're a freak of nature,
Which puts you in the back of the pack, and it gets rough.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first memory, is how rough this was and how crazy that was.
I was, that's a pool I know. I'm very, very comfortable in that pool, and that was helpful.
But... And you've probably swam in a lane with someone, too, and that's a little bit rough.
True.
But it's nowhere near as rough as these things are when you have 50 or closest friends swimming at the same time.
Arms and legs everywhere. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Like I said, you get a lot of people close together. That's why this... triathlon interests me, is all these sport, these endurance sports interest me, of like, how are you going to run this in a way that meets the standards of everything, and you just can't.
Well, in the pool, you're in a room full of chlorine. I really don't have any issues with catching anything in a pool.
I would agree to a great extent, but it's just that's that whole things bunch up in races. It's just the nature of a race.
Yeah. Yeah.
For whatever reason. And that's why I always thought these were kind of interesting, to see how they were going to run these. And like I said, most of this stuff is on paper just to appease the health departments and stuff like that. I get it. But you start looking at it, you're like, that's not how this is going
to
work on practice.
To the health department, because we'd like to do this again. I would.
Oh, no, I wouldn't either. It's just interesting because you look at the stuff on paper and I'm like, I know what you're doing. I know how you're trying to get it passed through, but then we look at the reality of a race and just none of this stuff happens. It's funny, but
most people, after the race, everybody put on masks. They had them there, because I left mine up at the pool.
Right.
And I grabbed another one when I was down there. No, it was not a whole lot of spectators. There were a few, so that was, that was...
Yeah, because most of the races I talked to said no spectators.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why, when we were lining up at the pool and he was like, if you're not racing, get out. And so there were people on the other side. That pool has got the big glass windows, so there are people outside looking through the windows and stuff. Hi, I'm in a fishbowl, literally.
Yeah. That's funny.
But no, it was really good. I mean, I was really, I have not pushed myself that hard for over a year. Haven't raced because I haven't raced any running races or anything really since Boston. Excuse me. So it was really fun to just, to just see what I could do. And the fact that it went as well as it did, I really had no expectations of doing that well. So that was a nice surprise. Nice little perk. Yay. Hopefully it'll be just as much fun the next time. I'm excited to do it with this other guy, because it'll be his second time that he's ever done a full try. So my job is to keep him from panicking in the pool. After that, he's on his own problem. He'll blow me away on the bike. I'll probably run. Hopefully the course will be a little better, because that was rough. That was a lot of trying not to die and fall down. Run times will definitely be... Anyway, well, thanks so much for joining us for this wonderful podcast for our race recap. And again, we're sponsored by 3 Sport Endurance. Check us out at gothreesport.com, and we'll talk to you next week.